This is the Young Farmers Podcast. I'm Lindsay Lesher Shute. The biggest problem faced by farmers across this country is access to land. Who owns it? Who rents it? It all has a big impact on the kind of food we grow and who has economic opportunity in rural places. Our land access program director, Holly Rippon Butler, sat down with Megan Horst, who is a professor of urban studies and planning at Portland State University, to talk about how who owns land, who has access to land, has shifted in our country.
Hi, I'm Dustin Stein, ranch manager at Stubborn Farm and Burke Beef in Mancos, Colorado, where we raise grass-fed and finished beef. I'm also a leader of the Four Corners Farmers and Ranchers Coalition. I'm a member of the National Young Farmers Coalition because it's extremely important for young and first-generation producers to have a voice at our nation's capital. For $35 a year, you too can join. In addition to being part of a bright and just future for agriculture in the United States, you'll also get discounts like 16% off Earth Tools walk-behind tractors and 5% off at Felco. To join, please visit youngfarmers.org.
Can you just start by introducing yourself?
Hi, Holly. Yeah, I am Megan Horst, and I am an assistant professor at Portland State University in the Department of Urban Studies and Planning. And there I, teach classes in urban studies and planning, and I also do research on things like land use planning, land use change, land ownership, food systems, and food justice. And I'm involved in the graduate certificate on sustainable food systems here as well.
Such important research, if I do say so myself. Why did you choose to focus on land-related research? What drove you to this field of study?
Well, good question. Broadly, I guess I'm just really interested in who owns land and who accesses land and how they use that land and manage and steward or not steward that land. It's just super important for everything, but particularly for sort of the environmental sustainability, long-term sustainability of our society and how we function, for questions of social justice, really for sort of the ethics and soul of our place. So all those things just matter a lot to me. And, also land use change and access is also pretty visible. And I see changes to it happening around me all the time. Things like, development on really rich farmland, or changes in ownership are sometimes visible, sometimes not. So some of that is just very visible and something that's concerned me or that I've been interested in, I guess, since I was young.
Yeah, I think that is so true. It's so important. And it's really true that a lot of people don't realize or aren't aware of land ownership as this force that's around us and acting on the way that our land looks all the time. And it's something that I think it's really interesting that you dug into and found all this data on. So I want to ask you about your research, and in particular, this paper that you published in 2018 on the racial, ethnic, and gender inequities in farmland ownership and farming in the U.S. So for people who haven't read it, can you just give a quick overview of what you found and why it's important?
Yeah, happy to. So in that paper, which I should say I co-authored with my student Amy Marion, we had two projects, I guess. The first one was to trace the history, particularly focusing on structural inequities in the U.S. in agriculture, kind of talked about them in a couple phases, and then we looked at current data. So let me just say a few things about the history part. So in that part, we were looking at historical and ongoing structural inequities that particularly affect people of color, racial and ethnic minorities, and women throughout U.S. agricultural history. In addition to that, also, California and other states had waves of laws excluding Chinese and Japanese Americans from land ownership, et cetera. I could go on and on. There's also examples of women being excluded from land ownership, and that often layered with the racial and ethnic identity, but it also stood alone from it in some ways in that in times in history, married women, for example, had much less title over land than men and would lose it if they weren't married, or if the male died, and etc.
Right. You call out just that they couldn't even if their husband died, they had no say anymore in what happened to the land at certain times.
Yeah, at least in certain parts of the U.S. and certain parts of history, for sure. And then another kind of factor in history is also just the ongoing restructuring of agriculture that's been occurring in the U.S. almost for 100 years now, you know, a big push towards larger, industrialized, more capitalized farms. And that's been a push by U.S. federal policy and sort of, you know, global trends towards that in every sector, coupled with not a lot of support for mid and small sized farms. And that has had disproportionate impacts, racial, ethnic, and gender impacts, because people of color and women tend to own and manage smaller farms and more direct market farms for all kinds of reasons. So I could say a lot more, but that was the first part of the paper. And then in the second part, we really moved on to looking at data in today's times. And, you know, probably unsurprising to hear that there are inequities, but we thought they were a little stunning. And basically, white Americans are much more likely to own land and benefit from the wealth it generates. So the data that we looked at was from 2012 to 2014. White people comprised over 97% of non-farming landowners, 96% of owner-operators, and 86% of tenant-operators. And they also generated 98% of all farm-related income from land ownership and 97% of the income that comes from operating farms. So that's that picture. But on the other hand, farmers of color, so Black, Asian, Native American, Pacific Islander, and those reporting more than one race, comprise less than 3% of non-farming landowners and less than 4% of owner-operators. And they were much more likely to be tenants. They owned less land and smaller land and generated much less wealth from farming. Latinx farmers comprised only 2% of non-farming landowners and 6% of owner-operators, which is well below their representation in the population, but they comprised over 80% of farm laborers. So, you know, that's a part of the food system that's notoriously undercompensated, difficult, vulnerable, etc. And then, you know, in addition to those racial and ethnic disparities, we also found disparities by gender, and they were different, though, than ones by race. There were much fewer female farm operators and tenant farmers, although there was a substantial portion of non-operating landowners, probably likely due to inheriting land. And female farmers tended to generate much less income. So the big picture is that there are a lot of ongoing racial and ethnic and gender disparities. And actually, when you compare to what we can compare to 100 years ago, we have made no progress, I guess. We're just as racially inequitable as we were 100 years ago in U.S. agriculture. So, yeah, and in the paper, we end with a call for action by people involved in the food movement, by policymakers, et cetera.
So those numbers are jarring, and it's showing almost complete ownership of U.S. farmland by white people. And I'd also want to get into a little bit about the data. I love the census. I love data. I get so excited when it's time for the new census just came out last month. So how did you find the numbers that you used for your research, and what's out there? How are people collecting information about farmers and land ownership? Are they going around and knocking on doors or looking at tax records? What's happening?
The way I approached this, the way I asked this question, was that I used three different sources of data on farmers, because I think the primary source of data that people use is the Census of Agriculture. And that is a really important piece of information, but it's also incomplete in its look of farming. So let me say a little more about that. So I used data from the 2014 Tenure, Ownership, and Transition of Agricultural Land, the acronym is TOTAL, survey. And that is done by the United States Department of Agriculture. And what I wanted to use in that survey is that it surveys landowners. So that includes people who are not the principal farmers or managers of that land. They lease the land. Many, in fact, of those owners lease the land. So that's a group that's not captured in the Census of Agriculture. But it's not a regularly conducted survey, unfortunately. As to what I found is, the only comparable ones like it were done in 1999 and then like way back around the turn of the century. So we have very limited information on non-operating landowners on a regular basis in the U.S. And I think that's not great because actually a lot of non-operating landowners own a lot of land. So anyway, kind of one point. The second one is the Census of Agriculture, which you mentioned, and that is also from collected by our United States Department of Agriculture. And they do attempt to do a census rather than a survey. So they do attempt to mail out forms to every single farmer and have them respond sort of like the census does of the population in general.
Yeah, what is the difference between a census and a survey?
A census purports to be counting everyone, where a survey is some sort of sample size that we then infer about a larger population. So never does the census actually get 100% of farmers or in the general census 100% of people, because some people just don't respond or don't answer the door. You know, there's always a miss. You know, the phrase implies 100% when it's census, but it never is. And, you know, so what that one focuses on is operating farmers, including ones who don't own their land, so including tenant farmers. So it's a different take than the total survey. And one thing to note about that one is there's a lot of researchers who've written how, like a lot of these efforts, it probably historically way undercounted Black, non-English speaking, other minority, small scale and urban farmers. Although in recent years, the USDA is really aware of that and has put a lot of effort into doing better on counting. So, and it seems they have done a better job of reaching out to those farmers. But the problem is that it makes it really hard to compare them to the past, because it looks like we have more farmers, but it may just be that we're doing a better job reaching them. It's kind of a thing to know. And another thing about the USDA, it's our only data collection that's done regularly every 5 years. But it's very hard to compare to past censuses for the reason I mentioned above. But other one is just that the Census of Agriculture has changed how it defines farms at least a few different times in history. And right now, the definition of farm is anything with $1,000 or more of such products raised and possibly sold or normally would have been sold. So $1,000 is, not a lot of money. And so anyway, the definition is quite flexible, which I think is really good because it includes some maybe urban agriculture, more educational operations. So I think it's really good in some ways, but it also makes it really hard to compare to the past. And then also it makes it a little hard to say general statements about farming when you're talking about farms that have sales of $1,000 and then ones that have sales of $100,000 or $40,000 and then ones that have sales of $1 million, you know. At one point, the minimum, I think, was $2,500. So that's one
change.
So
it's gotten easier to be counted as a farmer.
Exactly.
Not easier to be a farmer.
I don't think it's, I mean, it's never been easy to be a farmer, but certainly not easy now. And then let me just quick say, the last source of data I used is the National Agricultural Worker Survey. And the reason I used that piece of data is because, as implies in the name, it's trying to look at farm workers who are not the principal operator or even secondary operator, but are, you know, the workers. And that is a super important part of the picture of farming. They are farmers, but we do not have great data on our farm workers. And even this particular source of data has a lot of caveats because there's just a lot of challenges in saying exactly how many farm workers there are and giving a lot of information about them and their living conditions. Because as you might imagine, that group is particularly sensitive to participating in formal kind of government accounting. And they also perhaps might move around a lot in some cases. So anyway, but I used that third one to get a picture of how do they compare to primary and secondary operators, so operators of farmers and landowners.
Yeah, I think that's so important, looking at combining these pieces of data, because that, I think, is one of the reasons why the numbers about land ownership being predominantly almost 100% in white ownership were so striking to me. Was I think about all of the farm workers and people who I know are growing the food who are farmers of color. And you realize just how big the disparity is between who's doing the work and who owns the resources and the land. Those numbers are really dramatic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like I said earlier, it's over 80%, I think I said, of farm workers in this survey, so the National Agricultural Workers Survey, which I must say was only interviewed just over 4,000 farm workers. So it was not a census, right? And anyway, but that over 80% are Latino or from Mexico or Central American countries, often Spanish speaking. So what you have is a picture of white land ownership and brown farm workers. It's definitely a racial ethnic divide. And, you know, honestly, it's a similar picture to what it was 150 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I think this might sound obvious to you if you've been thinking about this a lot, but why is it important? Why is it important that we know what's happening with the agricultural land and the farmers in this country?
I mean, I have lots of answers to that. To me, it's like who owns our land, who grows our food, how they grow our food, how they're treated. It matters fundamentally, I think, to who we are as people, as a society, to our long-term sustainability on this earth, to our ability to continue, but also just in terms of who we are as a country, in terms of our perception of equality, of equity, of opportunity. It matters a lot to the food we eat. You know, at the end of the day, there are ethical implications and justice implications of all of that data. And those of us who are eaters in the system, which is, you know, by far the vast majority of us, we are enmeshed and entangled in this unjust system, whether we like it or not. And the more data we have on it, I think the more it helps us act and know how to act. I think it's really important to have data-informed decision-making and policy and interventions, and to have baseline data so that if we try to make policy changes, we can track whether we're having sort of the benefit, you know, whether we're having the impact we want to.
So what are some thoughts that you have about what can be done, how we can address this disparity in land ownership and the wealth distribution in agriculture in this country? Do we need more data? Do we need to make substantial changes to other parts of ag policy? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I'm a researcher. I always want there to be better data, but I also think we know the problem. And I think we don't need to get in the state of analysis paralysis. We know there's inequities in farming. So let's move to action.
Thank you so much for your research and for taking the time to talk about this and think about all these issues.
Thanks so much, Megan, for taking the time to talk with us about your research. Check out today's show notes for a few of Megan's articles on land use and equity in the food system. And I think we also have a link there for Holly's side gig, which happens to be Farmer's Cone Creamery, handcrafted ice cream. Holly makes incredible ice cream. Have you left us a review yet? It's really easy. Just go to the bottom of your iTunes. You can give us a star rating. And we really love it when people write a few words as well to tell us what they thought of today's show and how we're doing. This show was recorded at the studios of Radio Kingston. Thanks to our podcast intern, Maya Benayoun, for her hard work. She makes these beautiful show transcripts. Every word of what we talk about on the show goes up at youngfarmers.org for future reference. Thanks to our wonderful and talented editor, Hannah Beal, our producer, Jessica Manley, Bilal Sawari, and wait, that's everybody. Okay, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.